Straw Man, The Real Story of Your Artificial Person, A Private Work by Clint, read for you by Josie. Preface, Part 1.
Volume 1. Quote, "He who learns must suffer, and even in our sleep, pain that cannot forget falls drop by drop upon the heart, and in our own despair, against our will, comes wisdom to us by the awful grace of God." End quote. Agamemnon.
Aeschylus.
Preface. This is not a published book. It is not a product, or in any artful form of commerce, nor is it intended for such public right, means, or ends. It carries neither a fiction or non-fiction title. Rather, it is a three-dimensional explanation of both, and of that eternal battle between the spirit and the flesh. Remnants of the history of political activism, such as Paine's The Age of Reason, Bastiat's The Law, and the inceptive Areopagitica by Milton, were all created in the form of what are known as pamphlets. These were also not published books per se, but statements of inert and often self-evident reason, with only as many words as are necessary to create a quite clear and empathetic expression of one's thoughts, printed sometimes anonymously and thus privately, so as to be distributable by a people seeking change in a political and moral opinion and disposition. The purpose of these pamphlets was to spread knowledge, and often a quite dissenting comprehension of current and foundational political views, customs, and norms, and to expose unseen legal atrocities, without the commercial intent to acquire personal gain from those works. In other words, they were not approved or welcomed by the combined powers of church and state. Quote, "Anonymous pamphlets, leaflets, brochures, and even books have played an important role in the progress of mankind. Persecuted groups and sects from time to time throughout history have been able to criticize the oppressive practices and laws either anonymously or not at all. It is plain that anonymity has sometimes been assumed for the most constructive purposes." End quote. Justice Hugo L. Black, Supreme Court, Talley v. California, 1960. Quote, "An anonymous work is a work on the copies or faunal records of which no natural person is identified as author." End quote. U.S. Code, Title 17, Chapter 1, Section 101. Anonymity is not a word describing that which is necessarily an unknown in nature. In the fictional legal law realm, it merely describes the absence of political or public character, that of a fictional name as evidence of some class and legal status, attributed to a work. And so I, as the exclusive author of this work, choose not to identify myself under any fictional, legally registered, artificial, legal person, and instead choose to remain anonymous to all such fictional realms. Let it here be known, but not registered in any way, that this is so, and that the spirit of the name Clint, greater than Richardson, bears no simulation, similitude, or any intentional or accidental sameness to any proprietary legal fiction, person, in any legal realm of fiction, the false imagination, and creation of man, called as governments, while retaining the full and utter authority and negative protections of privacy under the highest law of God. The use of this symbol greater than is portrayed for one and only one purpose, which figuratively is solely to signify the highest position of my first name, Christian name, over any possible misconception or legal opinion that this non-legal name, Richardson, has any supernatural, supra, and or lawful powers, authorities, or any implied bond to any legal jurisdiction either tacitly or expressly implied or expressed by its use. The name Richardson is not herewith used as any form of legal creation or admixture of fiction, is not intended as either a cognomen or agnomen, names, nomen, derived from family, cog, com, or from any event, ag, addition, nor is it herein being used, employed, in any reference to any legal agency or principality or its property. It shouldn't be misconstrued through legal word trickery as any form of proper noun, only as a private, non-legal homage to the blood of my real parents, these names remaining without admixture or legal attachment as any corporate or other form of personhood, carry no legal rendering, weight, or suspension in any way as to myself or to this work. To be without any such legalized name is to be without such dependencies on the legal realm. To the reader, the reasons behind these statements will become perfectly clear as we proceed, strange as they may presently seem. Anonymous, adverb, from Latin anonymous, meaning name, see name. Nameless, wanting a name, without the real name of the author, as an anonymous pamphlet, from Webster's 1828. Anon, adverb, meaning quickly, without intermission, soon, immediately, the same as he that heareth the word, and anon with joy receiveth it. Matthew 13:20. Sometimes, now and then, at other times, accompanied with ever, ever and anon. Webster's 1828. Intermit, verb transitive, from Latin intermitio, inter and mitio, to send. To cause to cease for a time, to interrupt, to suspend. Pray to the gods to intermit the plague. Webster's 1828. Suspend, verb transitive, from Latin suspendo, sub, and pendo, to hang. 1. To hang, to attach to something above, as to suspend a ball by a thread, to suspend the body by a cord or by hooks, a needle suspended by a lodestone. 2. To make to depend on. God hath suspended the promise of eternal life on the condition of faith and obedience. 3. To interrupt, to intermit, to cause to cease for a time. The guard nor fights nor flies, their fate so near at once suspends their courage and their fear. 4. To stay, to delay, to hinder from proceeding for a time. Suspend your indignation against my brother, I suspend their doom. 5. To hold an estate undermined, as to suspend one's choice or opinion. 6. To debar from any privilege, from the execution of an office, or from the enjoyment of income. Good men should not be suspended from the exercise of their ministry, and deprived of their livelihood for ceremonies which are acknowledged indifferent. 7. To cause to cease for a time, from operation or effect, as to suspend the Habeas Corpus Act. Webster's 1828. Anonymous, without name. This word is applied to such books, letters, or papers which are published without the author's name. No man is bound to publish his name in connection with a book or paper he has published, but if the publication is libelous, he is equally responsible as if his name were published. Bouvier's 1856 Law Dictionary. Anonymous. Nameless, wanting a name or names. A publication, withholding the name of the author, is said to be anonymous. An anonymous letter is one that has no name signed. Cases are sometimes reported anonymously, i.e. without giving the names of the parties, abbreviated to Anon. An anonymous society in the Mexican Code is one which has no firm name and is designated by the particular designation of the object of the undertaking. Black's Law, 4th edition. Ambiguity, doubtfulness, doubleness of meaning, duplicity, indistinctness, or uncertainty of meaning in an expression used in a written instrument, want of clearness or definiteness, difficult to comprehend or distinguish, of doubtful import. For extrinsic ambiguity, see that title. Ambiguity of language is to be distinguished from unintelligibility and inaccuracy, for words cannot be said to be ambiguous unless their signification seems doubtful and uncertain to persons of competent skill and knowledge to understand them. It does not include uncertainty arising from the use of peculiar words or of common words in a peculiar sense. It is latent where the language employed is clear and intelligible and suggests but a single meaning, but some extrinsic fact or extraneous evidence creates a necessity for interpretation or a choice among two or more possible meanings, as where a description, apparently plain and unambiguous, is shown to fit different pieces of property. A patent ambiguity is that which appears on the face of the instrument and arises from the defective, obscure, or insensible language used. Black's Law, 4th edition. Ambiguities, Latin, from ambiguous, doubtful, uncertain, obscure, ambiguity, uncertainty of meaning, ambiguitas latens, a latent ambiguity, ambiguitas patens, a patent ambiguity. See ambiguity, Black's Law, 4th edition. To put it as simply as possible, especially in the eyes of man's so-called legal systems of law, the more ambiguous a man is, the more he is intrinsically and internally graced by God and protected by God's law of nature. To the artificial law of man, ambiguity is the enemy. To nature, it is, well, the origin of all things, as nothing as the real in nature is ever born, created, with a name. Names are attached in the afterbirth and are purely a creation of man alone. Names cause things to be legalized, recreated, as art. And all that is legalized is pretended to be property of its creator. To be nameless, without respect of any legally attached or admixed surname, in legal terms, is to be part of the untainted nature of God's creation, reality. To be clear, first, Christian, names, are properties of God, or of nature or truth, while the last, or surname, is property of the adversary, a lie. When admixed, the combined or legal name is recorded in the legal artifice of government's tax registers, the Book of the Dead. Do not dismiss this as religion, for it is the strict law. There are millions of John Smiths standing as registered citizenships, for example, but only one fictional legally registered name, or noun, that is, quote, John W. Smith, is adjoined with the unique identification of Social Security number 123456789, at specific federally registered municipal addresses that is pretended to exist in the legal fiction and jurisdiction of the fictional, quote, United States. And so, Mr. Smith, all capitals, is quite the opposite to any man that stands in ambiguity, as that which is only an untainted creation of God's nature. With every fictional artificial name, title, number, and mark, one may be legally permitted to have attached to this rented legal status of personhood, the more we cause our extrinsic and external identity or appearance as a specifically distinguishable legal status to be known and recognizable to that legal realm and jurisdiction of the artificial state. This is to say that we step further outside of God's realm of nature, of reality, and cross over more and more with each mark, token, and sign into the land of make-believe, the land of lost souls in the realm of the spiritually dead. In other words, we become unrecognizable as our true self, that is, as purely an act of God. Our body, our temple, is corrupted by the legal fiction, by artifice, which is merely another term for sin. Please note here at the beginning that the word God in the King James Bible will be used extensively throughout this work. Do not let this fact turn you away, for this work is equally critical of organized religion as it is antagonistic of atheism. These institutions have nothing to do with the meaning of the word God or the Bible, as will be shown in many ways, and are designed to deceive and take away the knowledge of the law. While all of this will become perfectly clear, the reader must understand that the Bible is not religion. It is the common law. It is the very foundation of law, also called as the natural law. This is not the author's opinion, but stands as the record of the courts as documented herein. For now, all we need to know without doubt to move on is that the highest possible substance of law in all the so-called first world Christian nations is the Bible, and that it, what is called as God's law, defeats all other forms of fictional law created by men. In other words, what is legal is always opposed to what is the natural law. Fiction is always opposed to reality. And so the only way to study and comprehend the intent of the amoral or immoral legal law is to compare it to the spiritual, moral law of the Bible, which is higher in authority. This is not a flight of fancy, it is the standard of law. And one certainly needs no corporate religion or temples built by Freemason hands to follow the law of God. Quite the opposite, in fact. Clarity will be forthcoming. The maxims of law are very clear on how ambiguity destroys legal certainty, lies accepted and confirmed as legal facts or falsified truths in the fictional realm. But we also find that what is made sure by any name can only be the property of the government that registers and defines it. Quote, whenever the language of stipulations is ambiguous, it is most fitting that sense should be taken by which the subject matter may be protected. End quote. Black's First Law Dictionary. Quote, When in the words there is no ambiguity, then no exposition contrary to the words is to be made. End quote. Black's First Law Dictionary. Quote, frequently where the propriety of words is attended to, the meaning of truth is lost. End quote. Black's Law, 4th edition. Quote, propriety of words is the salvation of property. End quote. Black's Law, 4th edition. Here, at the beginning, we must have understanding of these two opposing terms and how they are used. For to understand our own plight as actors, agents, in the property, person, of the state, we must understand the origin and purpose of being legally registered by name at birth. The difference between that which is ambiguous, unowned, and that which is proprietary, property of something, is not only the very foundation of law, but of how law affects, sanctions, all things in nature. And so we must comprehend that these names and other legalistic words are patented as property by the governments that rule upon their value and deliberate, make unfree and unambiguous, their meanings. The words we choose to speak or write are what causes us to be seen as either a thing in law or no thing at all, as the Bible instructs us to remain. The spiritual law demands ambiguity, while the legal law demands and has artificial salvation through proprietary ownership. Legal concepts are always opposed to scriptural truths, for the idea of property being as salvation is certainly antichrist. In other words, the legal language is the property of government, and those who use it in persona may never claim ambiguity or spirituality. He who claims to be the legal name, false creation, of another, may not also claim to be a creation of God, reality and nature, and therefore cannot claim to retain or possess God-given, natural, unalienable rights before the proprietary legal master, administrative God, of that legal person, legal name and status. Only he who has command of his own words, names, has command of his own mind, body, and soul. This must be comprehended here and now, for this work is the very study of words and how they are used to control us. If we stop and consider for a moment, we may suddenly realize that all things legal, from the law to the corporations bound by it, to the products they create as patented or copyrighted works, to the money used to purchase and sell them, are merely a collection of registered, patented, and copyrighted words and other symbols on paper. What is real is never property. Thus, real estate is not real, not reality. Only the invented, patented name and title standing in legalistic similitude of the real substance of anything can be property of another legal person. One can only own words. The natural state of being of all things is, of course, without words. Even the species of man came before the words created by it. So which came first, the man or the name? The answer to this question is the very description meant by the word creation, as that which is not a recreation of man. To this end, even the most staunch atheist may continue with this work without questioning constantly the use of this phrase God, Creator, and Word of God, and that the entirety of its intent is to establish the difference between what is original, source, and what is a recreation of that original substance of nature, as the legal simulation and representation of things by their names or nouns. As we will see, this is the foundational principle of scripture, natural law, and of man's opposing legal systems and designs against it. And so the author's intent is not to cause anyone to believe in God, for not to believe in, love, God, is not to believe in, love, existence, truth. Nature is a self-evident truth, undeniable and self-existent, and this is the very definition of all that God, Jehovah, is. Without it, man would not have existence or subsistence. Nature, creation, is no man's property, for it needs no words to establish its undeniable existence as self-evident. Man may only own what he creates. Nature requires no proofs of man's imaginations or words to exist. Only the names and titles placed upon what is of God's creation, all of nature including man, need to be proven to legally, artificially, exist as fictions of law. And only those legal names and titles can be legally controlled by legal laws. Legal words, as terms of art, are certainly property, but nothing in nature is ever property. Property, in other words, does not exist in nature, reality. To be clear, no law of man ever applies to anything real, only to the names and titles of what is real. To call anything legally as real estate does not make that thing anything but a flattering title, words on paper, to some fictional person. Real estate is like a gold certificate, representing the real as fictional token, but holding no intrinsic substance thereof. It is not real, only artificially real. We must always know in our hearts the difference between God's nature, reality, and legal fiction. The word real in fiction can only ever mean that which is opposed to reality, as that which is an artifice of anything in the reality of nature, as a likeness, image, form, name, title, etc., but is never the actual substance of that which is called legally as real, i.e. real estate, real name, real party, etc. A simple way to distinguish what is reality and what is real of realty legal property is to remember that anything that is real to a person is never that which is real to a man. Similarly, what is real to a cartoon is to a man not reality. Art is not reality. There is nothing real, legal or unnatural, under Jehovah in nature. There are no images, no titles, no names, and no parties. There is only the purity of what stands in self-existence. Inversely, we must understand that the law of God, as the moral and spiritual unwritten or negative law of nature, which exists only in and over what is self-existence, creation, governs only what is of reality. Thus, it is also called as following, religiously, the natural law, and carries the same meaning as religiously following Christ's parabolic example, which is God's law of nature, personified into the story of a righteous man. For clarity's sake, to be a natural being or refer to anything as truly of nature is only ever a reference to that which has its own real source or force of life, of existence, without man's designs and inventions. When the same term natural is used in a legal sense as a, quote, natural person, this word source of existence is always as a fictional entity, and its force is never that which is life or true spirit. To this end, we must always remember that nothing in the legal realm should ever be mistaken as reality, as a creation of God. And so the use of this word natural in all others can never be trusted, because no nature, source, exists within any art form, any simulation, or any representation of anything real. Government cannot regulate or control nature, only the names it claims as its own property. And that power over the proprietary name requires the unwitting consent of all citizenships, subjects, so that the law and laws of nature may be pretended to be bypassed and replaced by the exploits of man's legal law, of the name, the legal law of persons, and of nations. When man lives under the tyranny of words, property, his connection to nature and duty to protect it, including his own family, is severed. To live in reality, to abandon the artificialness of the legal matrix and follow only nature and its law, is a choice that requires continuous conscious thought and effort by men to uphold a negative duty to all others at all times and without exception, whereas the opposing positive law of man requires no moral thought or choice whatsoever, forcing us to continuously harm and injure each other in the name of the law. Legal law is also called as the Roman or strict law. Its structure and wording simply cannot happen naturally and must be enforced by agents, officers, created by it under the color of a legal artificial office, called also as fictions of law. One law comes naturally, unwritten, and self-evidently to the mind of every man, as love and charity in their purest substance and action, while the other must be forced upon the mind of each man. Its pretended existence is and can only be as an artificial creation of man. Its object is only toward the commercial existence and support of artificially created persons, places, and things. It is only when these two realms are caused to appear to blend seamlessly in the minds of men that the highest law of reality, God, and of the legalistic laws in this fiction of false magistrate gods, that man and all of nature becomes helplessly enslaved to those few proprietors of words, controlling all that exists through legally assigned and enforced names and titles. Property, no matter what we may call it, is only ever made up of words. We often call these words as a title to land or other property, and kings and other gods claim mastery and property over their estates and titlements by similarly flattering titles and descriptive words. A title, noun, is a word or series of words carrying a legal name, and what is legal is never an act of God. In law, this simply means that a title never comes from nature, being not a part of God's original creation of nature, but of man's artificial designs and recreations placed imaginarily over it. Property is purely an invention of man, for all of nature in its ambiguous, unnamed purity belongs to God, its creator, and thus to all of man in perfect equity under that highest authority in law. This is not merely some empty religious sentiment, but the very foundation of reason and law. In other words, governments recognize and have established the Bible as being the absolute source and foundation, principles of law, and so do everything in their power to steer us away from comprehending the original intent of the words of the Bible as law. All of their legal charms and magical spellings of title mean nothing when the Bible is followed, when man acts Christ-like under the highest law of God. This is not religion. This is the law every reader in citizenship reading this work is voluntarily under. And this will all be proven in triplicate as we proceed. The unwritten, spiritual, and moral law of God's nature, the law of real things, may only be defeated by artificial, legal considerations of that which is real, and these are most often created by some proprietary words that make up titles, existing only as the legally recorded, confirmed, and ratified imaginations of men. In other words, they are lies forcibly believed to be legal truths. Legal law is a lie to govern lies, and can be nothing else. No real truth, nothing self-evident, exists in the legal realm of fiction. So like the word nature, the word truth cannot be trusted. For truth is but a proprietary word used to describe every lie created in the courts and legislators of the legal realm. What is truth to a cartoon or legal fiction person is never a truth in reality, for lies are not merely created by legal means, they are patented, published, and enforced as the legal, adversarial version of truth. It is a grave, spiritually dead, mistake to believe, be in love, that one's name is one's own property, and to be proud of such vain fictions. As will be discussed in detail herein, one's name takes upon itself only one of two considerations in law. A name either belongs to God or it belongs to the artificial legal realm of the governments of men and its false legal gods. The name and title a man claims describes and positively establishes his intent and law, be it the law of God or the law of legal persons, mammon. And so it is understood that as far as the legal name, the Christian or first name belongs to God, creator of nature, and the sir or last name belongs to the legal state, creator of fiction. According to law, the attachment and acceptance of what is last cancels the power and authority of what is first, source. A last name, therefore, is legally considered as evidence of the last will and testament, intention of any man. To act in the proprietary legal surname and title of another, to act in legal persona, is opposed to living purely and without mark and blemish under God and nature. And most importantly, no man may carry any legal title without it being attached to such a legal last name. One is always titled in flattery upon their already fictional surname, for titles do not exist in reality and cannot be attached to Christian first names alone. For legal persons and flattering titles are absolutely forbidden by the Bible, natural law. Only when this foundational, unwritten law of the Bible is broken, may the legal realm flourish in its lies and deceits, claiming all names and titles of persons, places, and things, nouns, to be its own by its written legal law. This is not the author's opinion. This is how the governments of men are structured and how they work. There is no room for disagreement here, for we are not speaking of religion. We are only seeking the truth of things, not whether those things are good or bad or appeasing to our own egocentric worldview. And what is, quite often, is not what we wish or desire vainly for it to be. And so, while this work certainly carries a series of descriptive words, it has no title because it has no legally surnamed author, both of which can only be artificial creations and property of government. If the reader wishes to call this work as the unofficial, unregistered, ambiguously enlarged words describing this work on its cover, so be it, as long as no misconstruction of these words is ever used in any legal fashion. This private work has no such marks, styles, titles, or other proprietary designation in any legalistic form. Title. The radical meaning of this word appears to be that of a mark, style, or designation, a distinctive appellation, the name by which anything is known. Thus, in the law of persons, a title is an appellation, name, of dignity or distinction. A name denoting the social rank of the person bearing it, as duke or count. So, in legislation, the title of a statute is the heading or preliminary part, furnishing the name by which the act is individually known. It is usually prefixed to the statute in the form of a brief summary of its contents as an act for the prevention of gaming. Again, the title of a patent is the short description of the invention, which is copied in the letters patent from the inventor's petition, e.g., a new and improved method of drying and preparing malt. The title of a book, or any literary composition, is its name, that is, the heading or caption prefixed to it, and disclosing the distinctive appellation by which it is to be known. This usually comprises a brief description of its subject matter and the name of its author. Title is also used as the name of one of the subdivisions employed in many literary works, standing intermediate between the divisions denoted by the term books or parts, and those designated as chapters and sections. Black's Law, 4th edition. Propriété. The French law term corresponding to our property, or the right of enjoying and disposing of things in the most absolute manner, subject only to the laws. Black's Law, 4th edition. Propiedad. In Spanish law, property. Black's Law, 4th edition. Propriety. In Massachusetts Colonial Ordinance of 1741 is nearly, if not precisely, equivalent to property. In Old English law, property, propriety in action, propriety in possession, mixed propriety. Black's Law, 4th edition. Proprietary, noun. A proprietor or owner, one who has the exclusive title to a thing, one who possesses or holds the title to a thing in his own right. The grantees of Pennsylvania and Maryland and their heirs were called to be the proprietaries of these provinces. Webster. Adjective. Belonging to ownership, belonging or pertaining to a proprietor, relating to certain owner or proprietor. Proprietary duties. Those duties of a municipality which are not governmental duties. Proprietary governments. This expression is used by Blackstone to denote governments granted out by the Crown to individuals in the nature of feudatory principalities, with inferior regalities and subordinate powers of legislation, such as formerly belonged to the owners of counties palatine. Proprietary rights. Those rights which an owner of a property has by virtue of his ownership. When proprietary rights are opposed to acquired rights, such as easements, franchises, etc., they are more often called natural rights. Black's Law, 4th edition. Proprietas, Latin, in the civil and Old English law, property, that which is one's own, ownership. Proprietas plena, full property, including not only the title, but the usufruct, or exclusive right to the use. Proprietas nuda, naked, or mere property or ownership, the mere title, separate from the usufruct. Black's Law, 4th edition. Proprietor. One who has the legal right or exclusive title to anything. In many instances, it is synonymous with its owner. A person entitled to a trademark or design under the Acts for the registration or patenting of trademarks and designs is called proprietor of the trademark or design. Black's Law, 4th edition. You must ask yourself, who has the legal right to define legal terms? Who deliberates and projects official opinions upon the legal words and terms of the legal art? And as merely the end user of these proprietary words of another creator, are you speaking in ambiguity or as a slave to the owner of those words? Who is the owner of your registered legal name? What does the legal word child mean when it's used to describe a legal persona, a legal status of man but not a man? And therefore, who owns as the property of the person of every child in every nation? Why can the courts of legal law take away the child from its parents at will? The answer to these questions cannot be found in nature. The answer stems only from the power and respect of the authority to those who own, hold, the words we use. To respect words, form, over the reality, substance, for which they represent, is the foundation of all lies, of all control, and of all sin. For the state never kidnaps a real child, only the legal persona of that child, which it proprietarily titles as a legal child. The legal child is not real. It is only when man cannot differentiate between what is an ambiguous term of nature and what is an arbitrary term of legal propriety, property, in false persona, that his power is stolen from him through word trickery. It is only when a man accepts the legal fiction title of father and mother over that of the reality and bloodline that these words represent in the reality of nature, that man can be unwittingly caused to abandon his only real property, child, to the legal fiction nation, state. For any real child registered as a legal fiction child and thus attached with a surname, number, address, and other signs and marks of artificial quality and character are only considered in man's legal law as that which is opposed to God and nature, natural law, as that which is voluntarily abandoned to the state. A child, in other words, is only a legal creation of the state, the word being merely a proprietary legal term of art belonging to the state, and the father of the child is only they that founded the state, corporation. For the legal state, as the districts of the many nations, is the property of a private people, and in every nation, only the terms of specifically proprietary legal art are recognized. He who uses a person, legal status, of any nation, is bound to know that language. And as we have all heard, ignorance of law is no excuse. But how can we understand the law if we do not understand the patented proprietary legal terminology, legalese, that makes up the law? Inversely, how can we understand the Bible scriptures as the highest law if we do not understand the ancient roots of the non-English language structures that it was intended to be understood by? You see, it is in the best interest of the king to translate the terms of law, both legal and scriptural, into a form that is virtually impossible to decipher. Power only comes from the secrets being held by those in power. And as it turns out, all secrets are held only by keeping man ignorant of the true meaning and intent of the words that make up the law. All secrets are also made up only of words, including the secretive, hidden meanings of all ciphered symbols. In truth, in reality, there are no secrets, for the truth of all things is self-evident and self-existent. In fiction, though, the greatest secret is that all words are lies. To hold the title to all words as a legal corporate property is the essence of power. Without this property in words, there can be no strict law, for ambiguity kills propriety, just as legality figuratively kills nature, connection to source. Quote, "The proprieties of words, proper meanings of words, are to be preserved or adhered to." End quote. Maxim of Law, Black's 4th edition. Man's law cannot exist without owning as its property its own artful terms, just as a painting, art, cannot exist without its paint. A person, a fictional legal status in third person, is quite the opposite of the true natural self, acting as self only in first person, and is a fictional identity designed to cause the man for which it is legally assigned, registered, and attached to be intentionally unambiguous, to stand as a uniquely recognizable or patently novel invention of man, designed specifically to clearly identify all things in nature by patented fictional names and titles, nouns. In other words, it artificially protects man against his own actions by pretending to put the blame on a fictional straw man. You might say that this is the pretended action of personification or anthropomorphizing of the straw man argument, the bringing to artificial life a logical fallacy artfully designed to place blame and responsibility for one's own actions where none can actually exist. It is the puppet master blaming the otherwise inanimate puppet for the actions of the master through it. In short, respect of any man's personhood as a false-eyed entity is simply an avoidance of the laws of nature. It is an abandonment of the word, law, of God, of personal responsibility. It is acceptance of false creation, the lies, and Satanism. And most importantly, it causes a man to become the property, slave, of that government which proprietarily holds that straw man, a legally registered and incorporated proper name, noun, recreation, that can only be used by men if we submit to its creator gods in legal bond and surety. Until a man is bestowed a status, legal persona, as a virtual vessel or ship, including name, titles, numbers, and other signs and marks of the legal fiction, his nature, self-existence, self-evidence, is one that is unknown as an act of simulation within that legal matrix. Man alone cannot be recognized as a fictional person birthed in legal fact, for man is simply too ambiguous, not defined or specific enough, to be recognized by legal means, terms of art, and jurisdictions. A man is of blood, a person is of words. To use a movie reference, the ambiguous man is not plugged in to the legal matrix, for he has no digital, fictional character that exists in that fictional realm. A legal person's existence is only ever virtual, false, artificial, and can therefore only appear in and as a fictional construct. If the person, straw man, were a visible mark, such explanations would be unnecessary, for we would grasp visually each man's person, and therefore his artificial status, for he would wear it on his sleeve or as a mark of his beasthood on his body, perhaps upon his forehead or wrist. But this mark is purely a mental one. The straw man itself invisible but for the artful words upon paper and the digital contracts and sealed certificates that make its pretended existence up, make-believe. The straw man may only be known and expressed firstly through the belief, love of, fiction, secondly, by the express confirmation and thus verification, non-avoidance, of that legal identity, and thirdly, by consent and voluntary agreement to the terms of the implied contractual relationship, imaginary social contract, and binding law under the proprietary public system that governs, controls, that legal person, status. In other words, the rules of the matrix only apply to those plugged in to one of its avatars. For reference, and for better comprehension of the Bible story as a whole, this is the same ambiguity that Jesus the Christ held, called by over 50 descriptive, parabolic names and titles therein, but never by any specific surname, state property, of Caesar. Jesus carried no legal burden, no registered legal last name of the state. And to be clear, the word Christ is not a name or surname, noun, but a description, adjective, of one's state of being and actions, verb, which when properly translated means the anointed. More on this later. As for this private work currently in your hands, let it be known and evidenced here that no matter what form it's in, I hereby claim it permanently to be an ambiguity. That is to say, it shall be held proprietarily by no person of any type, including all governments, and that I am the only man of God with proprietary negative rights to it under God's highest law. Therefore, you see, it is to be known here that this work is the property of all men in the purity of equitableness under the natural law, and must by that highest law remain always as such. No man may profit or gain from its existence, nor claim it as their own through any fiction or false persona, and it may never be caused to be artfully transmuted into any legal fiction or registered title. It is not bound by any of man's legal laws, all of which are but temporary inventions under the permanence and authority of God's highest law, word. And so, while no man or person may sell this work in any way, all men may privately and charitably give it freely to all others in gift. The natural law protects only the ambiguous man, male and female, in his natural, private, and charitable state of being, verb, only until such a legal persona, noun or status, is artificially, as an art form, attached to his innocent nature. It is through this incorporation that his good first name is consensually bedeviled and thus tainted in mammon, valuation in money, with an attached fictional last name. Man's loss of spiritual life happens in law when that legal, full name is acted upon and thus confirmed, meaning that we begin identifying and signing in that identity's name while utilizing its legal benefits and licenses. Once a benefit is received, the man is thus bound by the law of that property he used to obtain the benefit, e.g. the legal person or commercial vessel. Without a legal name, noun, all things in reality are in their natural state of being, as purely ambiguous and not recognizable by any supposed legal authorities as property of any man, person, place, or thing, noun, or name. All of what exists naturally, in nature, as creation, and without the legal patented designs and inventions of man's recreation, stand, as source and in foundation, without identification. To hold an identity, some real thing must be simulated in law as a fictional thing. It must be placed and repurposed into some legal system, a matrix of coded proprietary words. In other words, it must be named, placed in noun form, and recognized officially and legally by that artful name, term of art, by all who use and behold it. It must be pretended to be turned into a legal entity, to be identified as a fictional legal person or thing. Its life, reality, must be hidden and covered by spiritual death, registered legal identity. Id plus entity equals legal plus person, status. Entity, noun, from Latin entitas, being, existence. Fortune is no real entity. 1. A real being or species of being. Webster's 1828. An artificial species, this is the effect, covering, of a personhood. So too is cattle and game. We are acting as men of straw in a fictional, dead existence. We are portrayers of life as art. The legal, false, identity is reinforced by constructing and stroking the ego, which is created in each of us through public education and entertainments that cause each man to identify his true self as that which is false, as the person, identity, and thus property of another. And so our true existence has been turned from real, singular, ambiguous, and without fiction, into an imaginary legal class, sort, kind, or species, specialty, of property, some thing special, in appearance only, as that which is only for show. A person, status, like fortune, is no real entity. It is only form without substance, an animal, fictional life without a soul. The question that seems to really bake everyone's noodle out there is whether or not existence exists. Does fiction really exist? Strangely enough, though the answer may seem obvious, this question will be repeatedly addressed as we move forward. To be and remain free from that which is artificial, from that artful existence and authority of man's imaginations and designs of legal fiction, we must always and at every moment be aware of these two parallel existences, which are always diametrically opposed to each other. This is what is referred to as living in spiritual life or existence, a total awareness uninterrupted by false considerations. What is real and what is artificial cannot exist together without being forced and enforced by the will and acceptance of men. To accept and consent to fiction as evidence of the artificial self, straw man, third person, causes the real self, first person, to be hidden behind the fiction, which is the root cause of all that ails us. In this way, the artful existence of fiction becomes imaginarily, legally, self-evident, for it is attached only to that artificial legal self we pretend to be. At this point, the law of persons overcomes the law of nature, and man's actions are no longer guided by spiritual, scriptural law. Choice is destroyed, and thus moral choice is outlawed. For a person, status, in any form within a legal society, is only allowed to follow the legal code of that legal matrix, the recreated false law of its legal gods, creators. When legal words, names, are respected as strict law, God's word, law, is lost, and the blood of man is figuratively replaced with the word code of personhood. After all, even a virtual reality such as the Matrix seems real enough to the senses, and for we who are born into it and made to believe in, love, such a fictional structure, we have nothing to compare it to. We know not what life is without it or outside of its imaginary jurisdiction. We have no idea what natural freedom is. One birthed into the artificial world of this legal matrix knows no other way, no other law, and no other way to exist. For we are publicly kept away from the scriptural knowledge and natural law in every way possible, while still given the choice to use and live by it by law. In fact, it is this choice alone, this election, that legitimizes the entire fraud. For without choice, without volunteerism, the law would be simple and tyrannically directed. Confusion and illiteracy of language ensures consent without comprehension, as the maxims, principles, of law and contract allow. Ignorance, especially when voluntary, is the crown jewel of any ruler over his multitude. The main component in the battle between good and evil is to know at all times what is real and what is false, and to never worship or hold sacred that which is of the artificial world created by men via the many forms of art, idols, images, symbols, words, or numbers we have been habitually made accustomed to believe in, love, and follow. This is the true self-evident knowledge revealed by the Bible. And as simplistic as this may sound, one has to ask oneself why each of us has fallen prey to such fictional existence as that of this straw man identity that we all carry around with us every day in our wallets and purses, and on our cell phones and other devices, feeling virtually naked without it. Why are we acting falsely under the authority of fictional characters with fictional titles in a fictional government with fictional laws over only its own fictional persons? The answer to this can only be found when the fictional legal matrix code of law can be seen for what it is, the big lie. And the path to understanding this true knowledge is to be found in scripture, but only for those with eyes to see and ears to hear. For those who can see through that matrix of words to feel and know deeply and with total empathy the reality that they falsely represent, and only for those not blinded by their own love or hate of organized corporate religion. For the organized corporate religions of the world have absolutely nothing at all to do with the intent of the Bible, standing quite opposed to its word, law. What is real exists only in nature, without fictionally identifying names, titles, and marks, as worldly, unspiritual blemishes, including the self-existence of each man, and is in fact unsure and thus unable to be insured against. Only sure and legally, artificially provable, certified, and registered names of fictional persons, places, and things, nouns, can appear and be understood in any fictional place, name, or noun of jurisdiction by any agent of the legal fiction. As a municipal corporation, such as legally incorporated city, county, state, country, district, and/or nation. That which creates the words of the legal language art through registered names, letters patent, and other artful means is therefore the controller of all those created legal names, nouns. And he who acts in and uses those names and other terms of art as property of another are controlled by the laws attached to the use of those legal names and other legal words. This is called the law of persons. To have a legal status, persona, within any government is to be bound by the law of that status, person. All legal persons, places, and things, proprietary nouns, are strictly unambiguous and thus unmistakably identifiable, but only as long as the man in first person can be made to believe that he or she is indeed that fictional identity in third person, and not one's own real self existing only in nature and its law. Blood and blood alone makes the private man, while artificial legal identity alone makes the public person status of man. Man cannot protect himself from the big legal lie and law that is the legal realm, if he participates in its rented property of legal persona, legal status, for the person is the plug into that legal matrix. God's unalienable law applies only to God's creation, not to man's art and legal persons. A person cannot claim any law but the law of man, the law of persons.
To rent the property of another requires a strict, forcibly sanctioned adherence and consent to the law of the owner of that rented property, just as a slave owes fealty to his master. This is the ancient battle between reality and fiction, or as some may choose to refer to it, that eternal war between God, reality, and Satan, artifice. Surprisingly, through years of deep study, I was astonished to find that this is exactly what the Bible is about. We are engaged in a battle of reality versus artifice, nothing more and nothing less. Quote, "So also is the resurrection of the dead. It is sown in corruption. It is raised in incorruption. It is sown in dishonor. It is raised in glory. It is sown in weakness. It is raised in power. It is sown a natural body. It is raised a spiritual body. There is a natural body, and there is a spiritual body." End quote. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 42-44, King James Bible. This continuous referential to being raised from the dead has nothing to do with the actuality of one's physical death. In law, being considered as dead is the key to a legal life. Death is simply a false life, existence, or entity, lived in the big legal lie of fiction, strong delusion, without respect to God's nature, self-evident truth. Its rebirth from death, from life lived under legal law and sanction, is a metaphor for returning to nature and its law, for abandoning artifice, sin, and returning to reality, truth, and for utilizing through our actions, force of life, exclusively the law and utter authority of God's nature, reality. In order to walk only upon this righteous path, we are given the perfect example to follow as the story of a man standing perfectly under the natural law, the allegorical story of Jesus the Christ. There are but two realms upon this earth, one of God in a natural state of spiritual life and self-existence, and the other of a lower, legal state of fiction in a spiritual death, also called as a civil life. What is civil is always artificial. What is artificial must be recreated and renamed into what is a legal identity so as to artfully exist. For what is legal but that which is by its design opposed to reality, to nature, to God, and to life itself? This legal state of the pretended death of the spirit in false persona is also called legally as citizenship, which is why the United States citizenships are called as natural persons in law, and not spiritual persons. In fact, it would be an oxymoron for a man's person to be called as spiritual, for only that which is truly living can be said to have a spirit of God, of reality, and of nature. Persons are always of fiction, not reality. When the word nature or natural is recreated and renamed into their legal equivalents, similitudes, as that which is opposed to the real thing, then that which is legally called, styled, as natural can only ever be that which is an artificial representation thereof, and therefore quite the opposite of what is truly of, belonging to, nature, God. This is the way of fictional things, of civil, legal, artificial, dead existence, the evidence of which being more than conclusively shown herein to satisfy even the most ardent skeptic, if he or she should dare to challenge the power of their own ego, so as to finish this work and discover the nature of this false, devilish identity, also known as the straw man. For the spirit is of life, not death. It is not an afterlife, except to say that every man may rise from such a dead pledge, mortgage, in the false persona, artificial status, of this delusional, legal existence. End of preface, part 1.